where you're from, it's where you're at. He's sitting in the White House, so who cares if he's black? And why is there soldiers still out there in the back? Natural resources ain't yours, it's theirs, give it back. You're just another puppet, but I'm not surprised. Look at Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice. They didn't change ish house, niggas fresh off the slave ship. You all burn in hell, even Michelle abomination.
Strip was getting bombed, Obama didn't say shit. Who's the bigger threat, from Osama or from Obama? Military bases from Chagos to Okinawa. I say things that other rappers won't say, cause my mind never closed like Guantanamo Bay. Hope you didn't build a statue or tattoo your arm, cause the drones are still flying over Pashtunistan. Did he defend the war? He extended more, even had the time to attempt a coup in Ecuador. Morales and Chavez, the states are on the hunt for ya. Military now stationed on bases in Colombia. Take a trip to the past and tell them I was right. Ask Ali Abu Nima and Jeremiah Wright. Drones over Pakistan, Yemen and Libya. Is Obama the bomber getting ready for Syria? First black president, the masses were hungry, but the same president just bombed an African country like...
The Jonas Brothers are here. They're out there somewhere. Sasha and Malia are huge fans, but boys don't get any ideas. I have two words for you: predator drones. You will never see it coming. You think I'm joking?
This is Summer Reese, Interim Executive Director and Chair of the Board of Pacifica Foundation Radio. I will be discussing the future of WBAI live Thursday, October 24th, 2013 at 6 p.m. following the Tom Hartman Show. Please tune in to learn more about the options the Board of Directors may be considering and the plans to ensure this important radio station's future and how you can be a part of that.
Look out in the street there. You know what you don't see? My car. Because I had to sell it to pay the lawyer I hired when I got busted for drunk driving. Know what else you don't see? My girlfriend, who decided that a guy with no car and no license and no money was no fun.
Cops are out there cracking down on drunk driving all across the country. And they'll see you before you see them. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
And wow, that's like a bona fide PSA. That's a public service announcement. It's not a prostate, whatever the other PSA thing is. Your mic isn't on yet, Terrence. Now it's on. Now you can talk. I'm looking for my theme is what I'm doing. and you know that when it's this organized, that this is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. Yes, that report to the listener with Summer Reese should be mighty interesting, I've got to tell you. Big things are happening because little monies were coming in, although I understand we've been doing not horribly. But, you know, that doesn't mean that WBAI is going to continue the way that it has, as Summer said in that announcement. You should find out about the options that are being laid out for WBAI and the future of WBAI. But don't let that stop you from pledging. Don't let that stop you from calling our special phone number. Like in Special Olympics. Area code 516-620-3602. I recommend the BAI Buddy. I won't be pitching all morning, Terrence, just for a little while now. But the BAI buddy option is a cool option because it's $10 a month, and $10 a month is, you know, a sustaining membership. It's a good thing. It's $120 a year. It's what you pay for, like, one channel on your cable TV. It's a premium. It's less than your first premium channel.
Two coffees a month at Starbucks?
Yes, exactly. So $10 a month to become a BAI buddy. And if you order right now, for that $10 a month, you will get an 8 GB thumb drive, flash drive, whatever you want to call it, Andrew Phillips.
Storage device.
A storage device, a small storage device that will fit into your personal USB slot. Not to get, you know, too graphic about it, but hopefully.
It's after midnight.
It's after midnight. We're in safe harbor, so it's your personal USB slot. And you can put into that slot of yours the 100 speaker collection. That's all these different great speeches of the year and a mix done by Peter Beauchamp, along with the best of WBAI, which means it should be... I'm not even going to be on there, am I? Actually, I think there is... There are a couple of things that I produced in that Best of BAI. I think part of my Peter Schickley concert may be in there.
That'd be good.
And don't know about my Tolkien reading, although that was, I say mine, it was Baird Searles doing the reading. I co-produced it with David Marks and Margot Adler, and we actually did it with the permission of Tolkien, who was alive. Not only was he alive, but I got to phone him and ask him the pronunciation of the wizard, the gray wizard. So, that's a whole other story. But suffice it to say, 10 bucks a month? Yeah. Get an 8-gig thumb drive. Why, the value of that thumb drive alone, you'd have to pay $15.
If.
No, actually, they'd be what? An 8-gig drive, about $25, $30, Terrence?
I haven't picked one up in a while.
Yeah.
If you shop hard, you can find, like, you know, 20, but it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah, but this goes for us.
And it's filled with content.
And it's filled, jam-filled.
Jam-packed and fun-filled.
Yes, with I actually, given that these are MP3s, I don't think all 8 gigs are used, but it contains hundreds of hours of material, and that is true. So, $10 a month, the BAI buddy at area code 516-620-3602. And what you will be doing is telling the management that Hour of the Wolf science fiction programming is something you value. Tell the current management, tell the management who will pay to become the management. Well, as I said, listen to Summer Reese tomorrow night. That's an option. That's not a definite thing. But it's something that's going on.
The world is filled with options. So.
Yes, indeed. So, having said that, I think it's time to start the theme music. And we'll be back. Possibly sooner than I thought. Ah, here we are.
Thank you.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a morning program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With me this morning, Terrence Taylor. Now, we're not going to be pitching all morning, so it's safe to stay tuned. We're going to gab a lot.
Shoot 'em up, destiny. Bang, bang, shoot 'em up to the moon. Bang, bang, shoot 'em up. One, two, three.
One, two, three, four.
I wanted to be a spaceman. That's what I wanted to be. But now that I am a spaceman, nobody cares about me. Send me real soon. I want to be a spaceman. I want to be so bad. But now that I am a spaceman, I'd rather be back in the past. Hey, Mother Earth, won't you bring me back down safely to the sea? Around and around and around and around is just a lot of lunacy.
Down.
Round and around and around and around and around. Safe.
Hour of the Wolf movie review, air date October 24th, 2013, Carrie and Escape from Tomorrow. Take two,
they're small.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. There's not much wrong with the new remake of Carrie, save for the fact that the original Carrie does everything better. Director Kimberly Pierce tries to put a new spin on the material by going a more naturalistic route, particularly in her portrayal of the relationship between the withdrawn, telekinetic teenager Carrie, played by Chloe Grace Moretz, and her psychotically religious mother, played by Julianne Moore. And really, if you haven't seen the original Brian De Palma version, this would go down as a serviceable, decently entertaining horror film. But if you haven't seen the original Brian De Palma version, listen to me. See the original Brian De Palma version. It is a horror classic, one of the films that at that particular time helped rewrite the genre, and De Palma's intense operatic vision has it all over Pierce's wan, generic one. So let's not talk about that anymore. Instead, let's talk about Escape from Tomorrow, a small, independently produced horror comedy that's catching attention as much for the way it was produced as for the story it's telling. The plot is that on the last day of his family vacation at Disney World, a father, played by Roy Abramson, receives word that he's being fired from his job. So a family trip to a place that, as many can attest, tends to make things arduous to begin with, here becomes the vacation from hell. The kids are cantankerous, there are encounters with fellow tourists who are hostile when they're not out and out bizarre, and there are a couple of exceedingly cute French teenagers who regularly turn up to distract the attention of a father who more and more is seeking an exit route from his dead-end life. More, it becomes increasingly obvious that sinister things are happening at the happiest place on Earth, including demon infestations, a booming market in illicit encounters with Disney princesses, and a corps of telepathic shock troops who can plant happy memories in the minds of traumatized children. But whether all this is actually happening, or represents the father's psychotic break with reality, or may have something to do with a cat flu that posters in the Disney infirmary warn about, isn't clarified until the very end. The film was directed by Randy Moore, who's not only making his feature film directing debut, but appears to be making his film debut in any capacity. Really, there's nothing else on his IMDb listing. And if you're wondering how he was able to get Disney to cooperate with turning their parks into hi-ho, hi-ho houses of horror, the answer is, he didn't. He snuck cameras and cast into the parks and hotels at both Disney World and Disneyland, shot his film on the fly, and with some green screen enhancements and sequences shot on actual sets, has released Escape without the Mouse House's official blessing. So right there, there's the novelty of Moore's guerrilla assault on an entertainment behemoth to speak in the film's favor. The question is whether there's anything more to recommend it. And that turns out to be a mixed bag indeed. For all the stones that Moore exhibits in his production process, he's less assured at telling his story. The pacing seems off, and there are too many times when it does seem like the filmmakers have only their renegade technique to sell. Moore toys with a few themes, the notion of corporatized fun, the tendency of Disney to harp on the concept of imagination to the point where the word begins to lose its meaning, but they aren't deployed in any consistent manner. Still, if you let yourself sink with Escape's scattershot technique, there are payoffs. On a recent episode of the Doug Loves Movies podcast, actor Abramson likened the film to something by David Lynch, but there's less of Lynch's elegant dread here than the impetuous whatever-format-works-at-the-moment style of such satirical Adult Swim programs as Children's Hospital or NTSF-SD-SUV. And when the film does rally to a moment, such as an encounter with a single mother way too invested in the transformative power of the Disney princesses, or a visit to a corporate torture chamber come reprogramming laboratory, those moments nail a feeling that's simultaneously creepy and funny, making it worth all the chaos. Escape from Tomorrow is a novelty, but in the moments when it rises above that status, it does make a considerable and chilling impression. I'm Dan Persons. Check out more about the worlds of fantastic film and TV at Cinefantastique Online over at cfqonline.com.
My father was a rocket man. He often went to Jupiter or Mercury, to Venus or to Mars. My mother and I would watch the sky and wonder if a fallen star was a ship becoming ashes with a rocket man inside. My mother and I never went out unless the sky was cloudy or the sun was blotted out, or to escape the pain. We only went out when it rained. My father was a rocket man. He loved the world beyond the world, the sky beyond the sky. And on my mother's face, lonely as the world in space, I could read the silent cry that if my father fell into a star, we must not look upon that star again. My mother and I never went out unless the sky was cloudy or the sun was blotted out. To escape the pain, we only went out when it rained. Tears are often jewel-like. My mother's went unnoticed by my father, for his jewels were the stars. In my father's eyes I knew he had to find, in the sanctity of distance, something brighter than a star. One day they told us the sun had fled, taking him inside.
Well, okay. Part of the music to give us a break, and part of the music so that we could find something for Max. But if you heard a theme there, by the way, we had Harry Nilsson with Spaceman, long a favorite song on Hour of the Wolf, and then another favorite song from Hour of the Wolf, Rocket Man, not the Elton John, but the Tom Rapp song, and that is very much based on Ray Bradbury's Kaleidoscope, and, you know, about how, you know, his mother and I never went out unless the sky was cloudy or the sun was coming out. To escape the pain, we only went out when it rained. And that's, you know, the whole thing about, you know, here's a guy who's basically just burning up into the atmosphere. That's not what happens in gravity. I saw it last night. We went the whole hog, IMAX 3D. And I will say that gravity is definitely, as far as the 3D is concerned, only the third movie. My partner Barbara and I went with Margot Adler, and who got a huge hit, by the way, when George Clooney says to Sandra Bullock, "I bet you listen to a lot of NPR." So, you know, Adler got a big kick out of that one. And That is the third movie I can name that actually totally justifies the 3D. There's the Werner Herzog documentary Cave of Forgotten Dreams, which, if you were listening 3 weeks ago, I was discussing in passing with Kim Stanley Robinson, who was our guest. And by the way, we'll also be on again in mid-November, only this time live, so you can take phone calls. We can take phone calls. And I noticed, by the way, that Kim Stanley Robinson was recently the subject of one of the Google talks, not the subject, but the speaker, that Google invited him to one of their studios, and he presented a one-hour thing that you can see on YouTube. And I thought, hey, and he's doing Hour of the Wolf twice. That's cool. So there's Cave of Forgotten Dreams. There's Hugo, directed by Martin Scorsese, and Gravity. And I would say that these three movies are the only movies in which it's worth the extra bucks for the 3D. We saw the preview for Hobbit 2, Desolation of Smaug, and I have to say, the promo didn't do anything for me.
Well, it just tell me it's two parts and not three.
It's three.
Because I just didn't want to have to sit through another 2 hours to find out it wasn't done yet.
Yeah.
I was so annoyed the first time.
And what's more, they're probably going to be cutting out, I'm not sure. I'm trying to remember his name. There's a Green Man kind of character. Beorn, I think his name is. He's a spirit of the woods. But he's not like friendly like Tom Bombadil. He's dark.
Okay.
And he doesn't trust the dwarves or the hobbits or even the wizard that much. So, and he's a great character. He's one of the best characters in all of Tolkien's writing. And we'll see if he even makes his way into this film. Otherwise, it's just dwarves get captured, dwarves get out. Dwarves
get captured, dwarves get out. Gotta fill 6 hours somehow. Why would they cut anybody? I mean, you know.
Well, it's not 6 hours. It's more like nine.
Oh, God.
The whole thing.
I only went the first time to see Smaug, and he only made a cameo appearance.
You saw the eye, yeah. Well,
I was like, come on, give me a break. I want more dragon.
With the previews they were showing, three of the previews had Benedict Cumberbatch.
He's in the second in The Hobbit?
He's Smaug.
But you don't see him.
No, actually, he's also the necromancer. So who? You do see him.
Well, okay.
Not that the necromancer is in the book.
No, but they needed to have something to show Benedict Cumberbatch for, like, more ticket sales, I suppose, from a specific audience
like that. And then he was
needs to see Benedict Cumberbatch.
And then he's in August Osage County.
But doesn't want to see him in Fifth Estate, evidently, which they are saying bombed miserably the first weekend.
It
make space movie money.
It was like number seven in ticket sales.
That's absolutely insane.
It's probably already made its money.
Oh, I'm sure. Sure. How much did it cost to make Benedict Cumberbatch blonde? I mean, after all, it's the biggest effect they've got.
Yeah, I guess.
Although all this internet stuff, they evidently do a lot of look, it's the internet working and we're visualizing it stuff, which gets really boring.
I thought Stephen Moffat did very well in Sherlock.
Yeah, well, Sherlock in general is just very good. So
yeah, but the way that he shows people tapping on the phone and displaying that's very clever.
Well,
that's nicely.
They were smart. They ripped him off when they stole Cumberbatch.
Yeah, well, there's that.
You see, they may have learned two lessons. I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. But, I'll wait for it to be on TV.
You know, yeah, I mean, now that I've got a projector, everything is like I wait for everything to hit Netflix.
Yeah, but Gravity,
or Blue DVD, you know.
Gravity is on a big screen.
Well, I was just checking my calendar. My guild screenings are up, so actually I'm seeing it on the 17th.
Ah, very good.
In 3D. It won't be IMAX, but it'll be 3D.
No, 3D. The IMAX was nice, But it's not a necessity. Yeah,
yeah. No. They did a beautiful screening of Life of Pi last year in 3D, which I wasn't expecting. And it turned out to be 3D when we got to the theater. And it was, like, really good 3D.
Now, between Life of Pi and All Is Lost and Gravity.
See, I can't sit through All Is Lost because it's like, I sat through Life of Pi. I can't do another guy in a boat movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is really not nice and not fair. I mean, because Redford's a great actor, but I don't know that I want to watch an hour and a half of him in a boat acting.
No, I really don't have a lot of interest in that.
Yeah, I know. I'd like to have more interest. I'd like to support him.
Gravity, but I have to tell people, is a must-see.
Even though her hair defies gravity?
Now, you see, people say that. It's like, it's short hair.
Well, they'd style it that way, wouldn't they? They should have shaved it like they did Ripley in Aliens 3. They could have just, you know, come up with a cheap excuse to shave her.
She's wearing a
helmet.
Not beneath the helmet.
Close?
She's not wearing the helmet for most of the movie. She is indoors.
Indoors. Yeah.
She's in a ship.
I know, but don't give things like that away, even at that. We've seen clips. We see that she's in a ship at some point.
Yes, exactly. And she's wearing
a practical NASA haircut, exactly.
But no, you don't see the hair. She's wearing a cap.
Oh.
You know, something that covers the head.
So what's the issue with the hair, if you don't even see the hair?
I don't know. Who's talking about the hair?
Oh, I don't know. First Neil deGrasse Tyson, then somebody else, and now it's gone viral.
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
First of all, my question is, I love Neil deGrasse Tyson. Why is he tweeting during the movie? It's like I'm looking at this like news thing on on iGoogle, and it's like showing all these little comments he's making, and it's like he was watching. He's supposed to be watching the movie, not making comments, and evidently messed up on one or two things because he was complaining about a medical doctor doing going to this thing and evidently to perform an experiment.
And what's more,
there was perfect justification in her being there, and he just sort of was too busy tweeting the last snarky comment to pick up on that, I guess.
I've known at least two directors of the planetarium when it was the Hayden before it became the Rose.
I haven't,
and none of them demoted any planets. DeGrasse Tyson does a brilliant job doing what he's supposed to do. His job is
spurring interest in science.
Is in science and in his planetarium, and he does that exceedingly well. He fulfills his job. He's worth every penny. Yeah. Having said that,
sometimes he just needs to stop.
He is a ham.
Well, he loves the spotlight, and he plays into it. I was watching a clip on YouTube
part of the
today.
Job. That is
but
part
no,
of the
but
job.
It is. And the thing is, I had to do interviews with CEOs of six not-for-profit organizations for 13 one year.
You have to explain to people that, by the way, this is Terrence Taylor.
Oh, yes.
And aside from being a science fiction and horror writer,
he also pays his bills by doing video and television production, largely for Channel 13, doing fundraising. And as long as that gets brought up, you may as well call in now. Otherwise, I'll just keep going.
At 516-620-3602.
And help pay for this, Jory. But it was a fun exercise because I like the job that I have there. I get to go in and do the fun projects that they don't get to do every day. I get to do a day-long marathon of Downton Abbey breaks and stage it as a tea party, and invite in viewers to mingle with employees. But the spots, the profiles were good because the thing is, there's all going to be CEOs. They were all the guys who ran or women in one instance who ran folk. The organizations, the folk. But you realize that what you've got is someone whose job is to tell about the organization.
Right.
So it made it much easier to get a good interview with them for half an hour. You could cut to 3 minutes, but it's always, and he does fall into that category. It's fascinating to watch people doing the historic sale of their organization. Who basically that is what they breathe. They can describe this thing backwards and forwards.
A former director of the planetarium, I produced a show with him here on BAI, intelligently called What's Up, because it was about astronomy.
His name was Watt or something, perhaps.
Now I'm blanking on his name. It was in the late 70s, and it was a it was
those
a fun show.
Days,
he was a cosmologist.
When the world was still
his
black
wife
and white.
Was Trudy Bell. And she was an astronomer, and he was a cosmologist, or it's the other way around.
I'm thinking
Mark Chartrand. Mark Chartrand.
Okay. He was a cosmologist?
He was a cosmologist, and...
Ah, I'm thinking cosmetician. I was like,
no,
really?
No, no, no. This is
wasn't
like,
it her? Wouldn't she have made... But no, of course
no,
not.
No, no, no. She wrote for Omni magazine a lot.
I remember Omni.
Yeah.
There are many people we know who wrote for Omni.
Yes. Absolutely, and edited for that matter in our circles. Yes, but the but at any rate, so Mark came on BAI doing a weekly show for an hour and talking about astronomy, not astrology, astronomy, you know, like how Jupiter was a failed star and things like that. We had on Arthur C. Clarke, you know, by phone, actually by satellite. Which in and of itself at the time was a big deal. And in fact, WBAI had the first satellite radio broadcast ever. It was in about 1973 or 74. And Arthur C. Clarke was involved in that. And he was talking about his far out idea for this is one science thing that he actually can claim credit for.
Yes.
He basically invented GPS.
The geosynchronous orbiting satellite that could
actually pick
up things and tell you where they are on the planet.
Yes. Yeah, that was a...
Yes, now you remember that vaguely.
Actually, you know, what everybody's taking for granted now was a Clarke invention.
That and living in Sri Lanka instead of London, which makes a lot of sense as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice, pleasant environments.
So anyhow, deGrasse Tyson... number one, a number of his complaints about the movie were wrong. And number two...
Which is why you don't tweet during the movie, but wait until afterwards, think it out, and Google a few things.
And number two is that he was nitpicking.
His point when that it should be called gravity-free was sort of funny, though.
When he was interviewed about... The whole thing, you know, because they went viral.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I know. Well, that was the problem. You can't do these things. They end up all over the planet.
And he did not realize it was going to go as far as it did.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah,
really?
Seriously.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, who spends half his time smiling into a TV camera,
doesn't
think that him tweeting messages about gravity is going to get
there's a difference
spread throughout
his
the internet.
25,000 followers, and it's going to millions and millions,
well,
which
was
what
pretty
it
funny.
Did.
Well, it went into, like, you know, the news thing. I mean, I saw it, I think, on the iGoogle CNN page.
When you finally get down, well, iGoogle's going away in a couple of weeks.
I'm watching it and using it to the last. Every day they tell me it's going away.
Yeah.
Every day I say dismiss.
So bleeping
I've
annoying.
Downloaded like a HTML that won't even open in Firefox. I don't know what the point of that was. That was one of their recommendations. And it was
anyway, the point is that deGrasse Tyson, you know, later on said, understand, I love this movie.
He went back and said, no, I was being nitpicky.
He was just nitpicking,
you know,
some minor
if he had been
things,
less nitpicky,
he
would have actually watched more of the movie while it was actually playing.
And Buzz Aldrin apparently not countered deGrasse Tyson.
He corrected his corrections?
He corrected his corrections, and he also
I've been there.
That is exactly how one travels through. He said the realism that the movie captures, which is what Cuarón was aiming for. I mean, he spent 7 years putting this movie together.
Just
and working with, at the
strange.
End, when you see the people we thanks, including James Cameron and all these different directors, where he was basically going to various people and saying,
How do I do this? It's not working. I don't understand why
it
looks like
crap. It's not working. How do you faithfully depict a gravity-free environment?
Right.
I caught in the movie what I think were a lot of little asides.
If he'd gone to Kubrick, he would have said rotating stage and Velcro shoes.
Well, you see a lot.
But that was the 60s. We've gotten better since
then.
But you know what?
You see a little wink and a nod to Kubrick throughout almost the entire film. Anytime any of the characters are indoors, and it's only two characters in the movie, plus Houston, Ed Harris is in there as the voice of Houston, you almost always see. Now, there's different detritus. There's a pawn from a...
There's always a pen floating through the air?
That's exactly it.
I was going to say, and that would be the homage.
Every
to,
scene somewhere.
There's a pen floating a pen, somewhere in the background.
That's there's a pen funny. Slowly.
You know how he did the original? It was on a piece of plexi, and they rotated it in front of the camera. It was like, oh, that's so brilliantly simple. So, and she was able to just pluck it off. It was like just lightly pulled on. Because, I mean, basically, you know, it rotates in. She reaches down. At the point she grabs it, it cuts. So you don't see the glue left sitting on the plexi.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant cinema.
It's brilliantly
I mean,
done.
It's slow as hell these days. I mean, I tried to sit through the first 20 minutes like, oh, my God, this
that's
movie's going to
slow.
Last forever.
Solaris
it's just
is slow. See,
well, that's slower, let's say. But, I mean, 2001 by today's standards does just drift. But it's still brilliant. It's still beautiful. It's like quite wonderful.
2001 is, you know, remains one of the top five SF films ever.
I was listening to, I was going through my LP collection the other day because I was trying not to do anything else constructive and was succeeding at the moment and pulled out an old Malcolm McLaren record, which wasn't the fans LP, but the but a sort of follow up. He had done these adaptations of classical music, combining them with sort of the hip hop sensibility and things. And actually, I mean, for all his faux showmanship, I mean, he did bring some wonderful things into the world. And there was this great, it's the Strauss Waltz, the Blue Danube Waltz.
Yes.
That starts out very traditionally and then goes into this wonderfully, like, sort of action movie sort of variation on it. But it was like, oh, God, you know, I'm amazed that no one's using this as soundtrack music. It would be just a great, wonderful start with, like, sort of slow, drifty Kubrickian images and then going into, like, some wildly sort of Fifth Element type action scene as you get into the ship. But it was really quite remarkable music. I was surprised it didn't go do better, but yeah, kind of ahead of its time.
Yeah, one of the amazing things about Gravity is that it doesn't, it's actually only 100 minutes long. It's not that long a movie. And
well, any longer than that would have caused bone loss. So.
Well, there's that. There's,
they had to cut it back.
And somehow, you know, you're not quite sure how long the real time of the movie is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. It probably takes place over about 6 hours, you know, from beginning to end. There are reveals that you don't want to give.
Yes, please. Thank
film.
You. Yes, of course.
But from beginning to end, it's riveting. Your thinking never drifts. It is like 2001. You sit there and you say, this, and Star Wars for that matter, you think this is a different kind of experience in the cinema than ever I have had.
Hmm.
It's just mesmerizing. It's one of the few movies that must, like 2001, be seen on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw 2001 multiple times in Cinerama.
Yeah, I think I saw it.
I saw it in 70mm, but it wasn't quite.
Because, I mean, I think the first, when I saw it, it was in its original release, and it was the full Monty. I mean, it was the big, giant, curved thing, environment that you were pretty much in. I thought it was brilliant. I was sitting in front of a bunch of other classmates who were making out with each other behind me who just didn't pay that much attention and thought it was just really weird and didn't quite make much sense. Having been raised on, like, you know, Grimm's fairy tales and most mythologies and all this sort of stuff, I mean, by the time I was in high school, I pretty much knew all the things he was referencing. So, I mean, it made perfect sense to me. It was brilliant.
Did you get the end of the film?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely.
I mean,
I hadn't gotten to the Golden Bough yet, but I mean, all of that made sense. The whole death and rebirth and the transitional, I mean, this, even the creation of the Star Trek.
I went with my family, and nobody else in my family got it. I did.
I think if you were a little disconnected, but it had to do partly with having a certain background. I mean, I imagine at that point you were already reading sci-fi, but just the idea
I was reading, you know, SF
right.
Since
and,
I was
and,
about six.
And mythology falls into it too.
But
he just certainly didn't.
Very well read, you know, but I don't remember his not getting it either.
Yeah.
It was mostly my parents were like, what the? What was that?
It was brilliant to me. And I remember walking out and specifically, you know, the kids in the back row, because we all went out en masse at that point and we'd get to the theater. The parents would agree to let us mass group. And of course, it would separate into the four of us who were just there to see the movie and the rest who were there to make out with each other who were sitting behind us. And specifically, some of those kids go, it just didn't make any sense to me at all. And I was like, it was the first movie that made me understand that someone made movies. I mean, at that point, I hadn't seen a lot because my parents didn't take us to a lot of movies. So I'd seen some Disney things and Nutty Professor and things like that. And they were amusing experiences. But 2001 was the first movie that I realized consciously
was
someone had to think out. Yeah. And someone had to figure out how to do it. Someone had to design what it would look like. Someone had to think about what they were saying with the images. And I got the making of 2001. I spent the next years with model kits gluing them together.
By Jerome Agel.
Yes, indeed. My paperback is probably still sitting on my shelf.
It's
somewhere.
One of the best making of.
And that was brilliant.
And
brilliant.
By the way, if you look in that book, have to come back to the trivia all the time that regards us, you will see two reviews of 2001 A Space Odyssey, one a total pan and one a total rave. The pan was by Andrew Saris of WBAI Radio.
At the time, that's very funny.
And the rave was by Pauline Kael of WBAI Radio.
Oh, that's very funny.
So and now she was a BAI, but not at that time. So I think it's a misaccreditation. Mm-hmm. Saris was on the air about that time.
Actually, come to think of it,
Pauline Kael might have still been around here then. She was, I think, writing for The New Yorker by that time.
Probably. I just remember in college we all read Saris and The Voice, and he was just ripped everything.
Well, Saris later on said that 2001 is one of the greatest movies ever made.
Well, a lot of people, Peeping Tom was
totally
ripped apart by a reviewer who later, after the director died, said she was wrong, and it was just a brilliant piece of cinema, which it is. I mean, I think it actually predates Psycho by a year. Michael Powell, Peeping Tom.
I know Michael Powell.
Michael Powell did Red Shoes, but he also did a thriller called Peeping Tom. Which,
I don't know this one.
Peeping Tom. I thought we'd had this conversation because Peeping Tom is essentially the seed of Raising Cain. De Palma's Raising Cain, because it's basically about a young man who was raised by a behavioral psychologist who would wake him in the middle of the night with a camera in his face and jolt him and do things to test for reactions and things. And for whatever, and I don't remember the details, but for whatever reason, this produces in him a mania for videotaping 60mm film, filming and murdering women while he's filming them. And he has he's played by, I think it was the same. No, it wasn't the guy who played the actor from Fahrenheit 451. I can't think of the actor's name, but very sympathetic, like Norman Bates and Tony Perkins, a very sympathetic portrayal of a character. He basically takes sort of B-movie type one-reelers for this guy who has a bookstore. He sells little one-reelers out of the back of, porno of chicks taking their tops off. And the scene, the first time we see this kid doing this, he's filming this woman. He gets the job done. And then he will ask her if she'll stay to film a little something extra. And as he's filming her, he reaches to he picks the camera up on its tripod. And then he pulls a case. Oh, no, but it's Michael Powell. So it's like Hitchcock in that you don't see anything. But what it is the image from her point of view of the camera coming down at her.
Right.
But with the knife blade in
that
the frame
it,
going
that
at
makes
her.
It even worse.
It does, because your mind fills in the blanks. But Moira Shearer moves in next door to him. They begin a romance.
Oh, they have to have Moira Shearer.
And because it was after Red Shoes. And she's basically, they form a sensitive romance throughout the course of the film. We're slowly uncovering what's this young man's mania is, and she slowly finds out by the end when the police are surrounding the house and trying to shoot him that he's got issues and that once again she's picked the wrong guy. But it's a brilliant film. It was, I believe I'd have to go online to find out exactly.
It
predated Psycho by a year or two. What?
Is it Powell and Pressburger?
I don't know. I might be. I don't remember. I mean, the
they were teamed together. Yeah, on I don't remember films the producers for years and years.
But it was definitely Powell directed it, and it destroyed his career. He was vilified in the London press. This one woman reviewer in particular just ripped him a new one and just started a campaign to like keep this type of smut from traumatizing our children.
That's very big in England.
Very big, especially at the time. It was 61, 62, or whatever.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening was, like, I was reading a piece on this recently, 20, 30 years later. I mean, his career just went, he did a few films after that, but it went right into the toilet.
Mm.
And he had been a brilliant director. He died disheartened and unhappy. And essentially, years later, after his death, she went on record and as a, apologizing to him that looking back at the film in the context of 20 years of cinema, she realized its importance at the time and what he was actually trying to do, that it wasn't just a lurid exercise. I mean, it really is beautiful. It's as well done as Psycho in terms of its depiction of a psychologically damaged character that explains the damage, explains it. But Raising Cain is John Lithgow, playing a guy whose father was a behavioral psychologist.
May I point, former WBAI staff member.
And he plays, it's a wonderfully funny movie. It was promoted like an erotic thriller, which it wasn't. And it's actually one of my favorite De Palma films. There's a lot of his movies I really dislike intensely, but there's a handful that I cherish equally. And Raising Cain is a riot. It's Lithgow. I would say it right, except I think I'm not going to, that I always go the wrong way. It's like turning at the last minute and hitting the wall.
Turn left.
But he chews the scenery wildly, plays about five different characters. You're not sure which of them are real and which ones are psychological. It's just great. But it's totally ripoff of Peeping Tom in the same way Just to Kill is a ripoff.
Well, everything, everything Hitchcock De Palma does, is with the exception of Carrie, is an homage.
Well, but, you know, Carrie in its own funny way is an homage. I just can never figure out what the film is. That's always been the mystery to me, but I know it's not original. It can't be. It's De Palma. But at the same time, I can never pinpoint what the hell it is he's doing with Carrie. Like, what is it he's... Because it works beautifully. That's why I kind of almost resent the remake, because I really love that version. It stood with The Dead Zone as one of the few completely successful adaptations of a Stephen King novel. No, we can't say The Shining, because The Shining's Kubrick film.
That's not the film I was going to say. Stand By Me.
Yes, but that's Bachman. That's not Stephen King. It's a Stephen King written story. It's a successful adaptation of a very different genre. Stephen King's horror novels have always been very hard to pin
down.
Cujo just was, Stand By Me was a novella in a larger collection.
The Body was called.
Yes. And it was a part of a larger collection of Bachman stories. That I think actually came out after it was revealed that the Bachman novelist was Stephen King. Just as now we know that, you know, his son is publishing now. Gosh, I can't imagine why none of his novels sold until he told the world that he was Stephen King's son. But
no, but he was getting the awards. He wasn't selling big, Joe Hill. But he was getting the awards for his work.
That's nice.
Before he revealed.
I'm sick of children of wealthy, successful people being wealthy and successful. I cannot tell
you. He is good, Joe Hill.
Oh, that's good. He damn well better be. His parents are both writers. His mother is a fair to middling writer herself. I think Tabitha should be writing more, but you know, but that's whatever. And she was influential highly on Carrie. I think she actually could be writing more. But at any rate, that my personal bitterness and angst aside, I hate revealing my, no, I can't say I hate revealing my psychology on air. It's why I come here for therapy.
It is, indeed.
For therapy, Dr. Jim. But so, but no, Peeping Tom, I mean, it's not gory. You could probably get through it. But psychologically, it's a delightfully twisted little movie. It's wonderful.
No, it is true that it's gore that
you specifically dislike. But, no, what you dislike, and you actually stated it very well, is that people deliberately do horrible things to create a reaction.
And that means that there's any number of De Palma films I cannot watch.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh, please.
Sisters?
Which is delightful. I actually have a poster for Sisters. I love Sisters.
I can't even look at a cake.
But it's so funny.
Of course it is. That's not the point.
Authentically chilling at points as well. But it's a very dark little movie. The actor played the doctor in that, and the William, I can't remember his last name, and the Paradise, Phantom of the Paradise, who played the Phantom, died about in the last 5 years.
Williams was the other
Yes, was brilliant. And Phantom of the Paradise is again, and again, it's like Carrie. It's like a De Palma movie I unequivocally love.
Mm-hmm.
It was the American Rocky Horror in that it was a wonderful send-up of a particular genre musically that just never quite got the cult audience.
Okay, I'll name two movies
that Rocky Horror did.
That are De Palma films that you'll have to admit are fairly original. Greetings and Hi, Mom.
Well, those were his first two. And yes, they were, because he hadn't yet figured out he could rip off Hitchcock for the next 10 years. And they're cute.
But
they're not great, though. But that, I mean, Greetings and Hi, Mom are like, I mean, it's early De Niro, it's early De Palma. It's like saying Kentucky Fried Movie is great because it led us to, you know, John, the director,
Landis.
It laid the groundwork for the John Landis to come, who did some classically brilliant films before killing Vic Morrow. And it isn't.
Now, you see, I maintain that he didn't kill Vic Morrow, but that's a whole other story. And I can't.
Well, not personally.
Off the air. Well, but he was held responsible. I have always believed that Landis was, shall we say, taking the fall
for the studio,
for the producer, for the studio. Yeah. For the producer of the movie.
Yeah.
Because.
Could have.
They could say,
would have benefited
him. We can take Landis out of the movie business for 5 years.
And then drop him back in and make it all better.
Right.
But we can't kill this guy.
But.
He's got to keep working.
But the other guy.
Yeah. Well, that wouldn't be the first
one. You remember the name of the other guy?
No.
Spielberg.
Because I'm bad at that. Oh, well.
Spielberg produced that movie.
I forgot about that.
Landis directed that segment.
Yes,
of
yes,
the film.
Yes, well, but he wasn't on segment.
But he wasn't on set. This was a setup during special effects. And so, who should take the fall for neglecting safety on the set? The director, the producer? The answer is all of them.
Well, yes, and you know, but it's all, but it's, as you say, it's Hollywood politics and rolling these things, and it's such a strange place, LA.
You were there for what, 10 years?
10 years. Yeah. Like I say, 5 years, wondering what I was doing there, 5 years trying to
but
get
you were
out.
In the industry.
Oh, yes, and that's, you know, and truer words were never spoken, you know. The deeper you get into things, the more you learn to despise them. There's a more artful way of putting that than James Baldwin applied. But
speaking of Hollywood and getting back to Gravity,
Hollywood,
an important question that a few people have been batting about, maybe not an important one, but a nitpicking one, nevertheless, is it science fiction?
Well, here's the thing. It's funny you say that, because I was thinking about that issue the other day, because somebody was complaining about DeGrasse's commentary and saying, oh, come on, it's science fiction. You have to give leeway. And I thought about that statement a couple days later, and it's like, well, wait a minute.
It's really not.
Let's look at that statement.
Yes.
Because the thing is, science fiction is actually supposed to be based on science. And as such, hardcore science fiction is always fact-checkable. I mean, it may be taking it to the next level. It may be moving it beyond what it's capable of. But the idea is that it is science and that there is some basis in this. Speculative fiction grew out of the concept of, well, I didn't really have that good marks in science. And I really don't feel like looking it up and asking a lot of questions.
Well, that's not what.
So I'm just going to write this and kind of say it could kind of be like.
That's not what Heinlein did.
And
remember that speculative fiction is a Heinlein term.
Because I'm too young.
Heinlein created the term speculative fiction in 1946.
But it opened the door to a lot of like lazy writing. Not lazy writing, lazy science, exactly. Now, and one could argue, I haven't seen Gravity yet, that it could be considered lazy science, but I don't know that it's not. I don't know that it is.
You know, it's basically.
You would say then that it is science fiction because they actually did check their science
on the
to the point of being accurate as they could be.
It is
within
science
reason.
Fiction insofar that it is fiction in a scientific setting.
There
on the other hand,
that is relatively plausible.
It's not relatively plausible.
It's extremely plausible.
Except for some errors.
Yeah.
It's totally plausible.
What was the whole thing with things circling counterclockwise or clockwise? How do you miss that?
There is, I'm not quite sure.
And
that
does
that's
everything
an
all
nitpick.
Go in one direction? Do you? I mean, it kind of makes sense that you don't want things flying at each other in orbit, and you'd all want them going in the same direction and hope they don't catch up to
it's,
each other.
In fact, seems impossible.
But
given
how would you do
a
that?
Few events in the movie yes. that things are going in more than one direction. We see something decimated in the film, and it's going in all directions. So why is it going to orbit in only one direction?
Well, what, you mean the debris, you mean?
The debris.
Well, the debris would go outwards with a certain amount of force. Now, of course, the thing is that my feeling would be, with the limited scientific knowledge I have, is that after the initial exertion of energy that would blow it outwards, that it would then be sucked into orbit by Earth's gravitational field, so that it would rather
eventually
than have
burn
it,
up.
Well, it
or,
would it, well,
or
pulled
Earth.
In, but even previous to that, that it would get just tracked around the planet. Now, I mean,
but
my,
would it have to go in the one direction?
I would think like water swirling down the drain. The answer would be yes by some
possibly.
Strange physical nature.
But that does have
and
to
that
do the with
the
rotation
magnetic
of the Earth.
But that would be the thing. I would imagine that
maybe
something
so.
Going around would be to, now. See, but the question then arises, and perhaps there's someone out there who knows the answer to this. Because the question is to me: if you take something and you
and if so, you can call us at 212-209-2900.
And explain how this would work. Because my question would be, if you just appeared outside Earth's gravitational field, but at orbital level, and placed an object there and let go, would it begin to be pulled around in a circle, or would it just sit there? But it can't just sit there because
okay, well,
the
so,
whole
so,
concept of geosynchronous
okay,
orbit
now
is
I've got
to,
tell,
to make a satellite
okay,
move at the same
I
rate
I have to
as
tell this
Earth.
Caller right now, if you are not on topic with what we asked, you're not staying on the air, okay?
Well,
hi there. You're on the radio. Hello.
Yes, James.
Okay, so you have the answer?
No, but I called about Bjorn.
Okay, but that's not the topic.
Bjorn?
Yes, Bjorn is a character in The Hobbit, and we're talking about gravity right now, okay?
We need to know the forces of gravitational field
okay.
around the Earth. So it is
just
possible
I,
that...
Let me explain to listeners. When I say you can call to answer specific questions...
It's got to be on that question.
It's
got to
be on that
question.
That's right.
Because this is what's burning up our brains right now. Because the thing is, since the Earth is
well,
rotating...
Well, it's called maintaining a flow of conversation.
Well, there we go. And we can't be jumping back. Now, if we could put Bjorn in orbit and describe the effect that it would have on him. Because the thing is that you would think that because the Earth is spinning, that somehow that force of the turning would affect objects around it in free fall.
That well,
somehow
that is true. I mean,
that would so that things would go the same direction as
planets
Earth.
All rotate
around the sun
in,
for that reason.
In one direction, they all
right.
rotate in the
right.
same direction. And what's more, and I've never understood why. Maybe deGrasse Tyson can explain this one.
If he's listening,
why are they all on a single plane?
Are they literally?
They are. They absolutely are.
I always
are.
Just assumed
that's,
it was like an atom and that we all, but they just
no.
drew it that way because it was easier.
No. They are on a
well, road. That's creepy
with,
as
with,
all damn hell.
With the exception.
Of the one that wasn't part of our solar system. It got dragged
no,
in.
No. It is part of our solar
by the aliens.
But Pluto is not from aliens.
Okay, with the Pluto doesn't is
Pluto
not on the same
has,
level as the rest of us.
There is a,
that's why it's not a planet. It's just a rock that got sucked in.
Well, that is true.
Yes.
As far as we know, and of course the science on this stuff changes all the time.
No, yeah, because we learn.
But the
some of us.
The orbit. Okay, so somebody else is calling. Let's see if we have the answer now. Hello, you're on the air. Hello, oops, no, that's a strange noise. Hello? No, let's try this one. No, sorry.
Maybe a strange noise called.
I don't know if it's our phone system or what.
Or ghosts.
Yeah, well, it's that time of year.
It is.
But anyway, all that aside, it's fascinating stuff. But yes, everything orbits on more or less a similar plane. Pluto has an eccentric orbit, and it is sometimes closer to Earth than Neptune.
Okay.
It actually.
Well, I know the orbits are all elliptical, but they're all in the same plane. That's a little weird.
More or less.
So deGrasse Tyson, he was on YouTube today. I stumbled across a link and I ended up watching it.
On YouTube every day.
And he was like, well, I was putting something up on YouTube and they have all those things down the right. And there was this thing about deGrasse and it was like, he says something factual and then a disturbing thought, you know? And I was like, oh, deGrasse Tyson, disturbing thought. Sure. What the heck?
Okay.
So I listened to the first half, which was him talking about that essentially the chemical composition of the human body matches the chemical composition of the universe, that the order in which we are built is the same quantity.
Well, this has been known for ages. Is why Joni Mitchell writes we are stardust.
Right. He wasn't saying this was new. You know, he was saying, but he was pointing out how fascinating it is. And I never really heard it said. I mean, we started with carbon, then we go down. But, I mean, the quantitative but we are star matter, literally. I mean, because
he was stardust,
saying that, you know, the chemistry, you know, you ask a chemist, where do the chemicals come from? You know, 100 years ago, he might have said out of the ground, but now we know why they got into the ground. And then he got into this whole thing about chimpanzees being 1% dumber than we are, that basically genetically they're the closest thing to us on the planet, and we're only – there's like a 1% shift.
It still doesn't explain the Tea Party.
Well, the thing is – well, some people regress. But the thing is that it was like interesting because he was saying how essentially chimps can do a lot of things, but the brightest chimp can do what a 3-year-old can do.
Right.
Sign language. They're not writing symphonies. They're not making great art. They're not – and that basically we, with only 1% more intelligence, have like gone to the stars and the moon and done all these things and everything. And then he started conjecturing about other life on other planets. And that if all you need is 1% more to make that much difference, that whatever could get to us is at least 1% above us.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much would look at us the way we look at a chimp and would not really want to have a dialogue. How many chimps do you chat with? Now, people do talk to animals all the time.
Well, this is
but
also,
it was very amusing.
This is similar
disturbing.
To Clark's writing, again.
And
I'm not the world's biggest Arthur C. Clarke fan, but he did cover this.
Yes, no, it's a valid thing. I still felt that when they sent out that satellite with the little like naked man and woman on it and all this information about us, that it was like, you really want to set a takeout menu to the stars? Because I'm thinking that there might
be
somebody.
That was Carl Sagan. I'm
telling you, you know, it's like, really, let's not go crazy with this because there may be things out there that may not have. My feeling, though, is anything that actually wanted us pretty much knows where
you are. That's a great premise for a book right there. Or a story.
You know, that they did it as a Twilight Zone, you know. It's a cookbook, you know. It's like the aliens come. They're very nice at first.
Well, that was a Damon Knight short story that later became a Twilight Zone.
There we go.
Yes.
Well, yes. You always go back to the roots of things, but I...
Well, when somebody says what it is, it's like it was a Damon Knight short story for 10 years.
I'm
before
sure
that Twilight
yes,
Zone,
I'm
you know.
Yes, I'm sure it was. But we only remember the Twilight Zone because TV's all that really matters. I was talking to someone the other day who brought up Alfred Hitchcock, and they were like saying, and you know the best story that I said, Lamb to the Slaughter, and they were like, how? I said, because everyone thinks that's the best Hitchcock story, and because it's freaking Raoul Dahl, it's a brilliant story, it's simple, it's clean, it's perfectly structured. Yes, that's the most memorable Hitchcock episode, you're right, yes. But of course it's Lamb to the Slaughter, it's all anyone ever talks about. But I love it because it's Raoul Dahl on it. He weaned me.
So have you seen Matilda?
Of course. I saw it. Well, no. Broadway musical?
The Broadway
I don't see Broadway. Broadway is opera prices now. I don't see these things unless someone's giving me discount tickets for free.
No, opera prices have gone.
I know.
I
don't even want to know what Anna Nicole tickets cost.
But a
friend came up from New Orleans. David, thank you so much for taking Eve and I to see the Anna Nicole opera, which was brilliant and wonderful, and I wept, and it was unashamedly.
And that was New York City Opera. Right?
Yes, well,
it was
City Opera's.
It was
last
the last bow.
And then the Times printed an article. They went to the Koch brothers, who had been people who were helping them, and they said, "We, you know, only need $7 million to like stay alive." And he was like, "Well, you know." Those people that Anna Nicole married into were like good friends, and they kind of like had 16% of our business, and they
weren't that happy with the offer, so I don't think I'll be giving you $7 million. And it was like, whoa, this is what happens when you talk about the real world. You get screwed because you can't talk about millionaires and ask other millionaires to give you money to talk about millionaires.
Yeah.
You got to pick the right millionaire. You should have gone to one that hated the family, and they would have gladly given him the money.
There you go.
I wouldn't take the Koch brothers' money.
With like 20 minutes left, believe it or not, we haven't even discussed
the new season of Doctor Who?
Well, the next episode. Why even talk about anything beyond the next episode? Who is John Hurt?
Well, he's the Doctor in a future incarnation. I mean, obviously. That's what they've set up. It's not a past doctor.
I think we know the past doctors,
but we know the past doctors. No, we've established the past. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. We know there are 10 doctors or 11 doctors now. How many are we up
first
to?
I
thought they actually explicitly said something, though, that he was the bad doctor in the future that sort of went wrong down
the
path.
He's not the Valyard. We know that.
Well, see, that's what we do. We?
Yes, we do, because Moffat has said outright it's
not
the
Valyard. But the thing is that, that's sort of odd then, because that was really the only evil doctor in the future but was established.
But there is a doctor that we have not documented. Now, first of all,
which was?
Well, I'll get to that. And this is my theory, which is mine. You know, the dinosaurs are very big.
Yes, I knew that was going.
First of all, what people have to remember is, rule number one, the doctor lies. Rule number two, the showrunner lies. Right. Stephen Moffat often says things to throw people off.
Of course.
And one of the things that he has been saying in more recent interviews getting closer to the program is we may have miscounted the number of doctors.
Yeah, and that could be disinformation.
And it isn't, because I have a theory that's a pretty good one.
Which is?
Who did Chris Eccleston, the Ninth Doctor, regenerate from? Paul McGann?
Well, one would think, but,
You're going to think McGann, that
between Paul McGann...
Between Paul McGann and Chris Eccleston...
Yeah, you could stick in another doctor.
And Chris Eccleston, we know, has regenerated fairly recently, because in the first episode, Rose, he stops when he passes a mirror and he sees himself for the first time and comments on his ears and other appearance things. It's the first time he has ever seen himself in a mirror. So we know that he's regenerated recently. From whom? Here is my theory. Paul McGann
becomes John Hurt. Does something terrible.
Who is the doctor who destroyed Gallifrey and the Daleks? The Time Wars.
So between McGann and Eccleston is the Time Wars, basically.
Yeah, that we know. That we know.
Because they basically did that in the reboot. They really didn't have that before.
Yeah, well, it was done like in some of the radio shows. Okay. But it wasn't
codified until the reboot.
Yeah, and it was because of the reboot, during the reboot, that they mention the Time Wars, and Eccleston mentions it by episode 2. The restaurant at the end of the universe, and they go to back to Earth, and he's talking about what it's like to be the last Time Lord and why. And then we are then later told episode 5, Dalek. We are then told.
Okay, but isn't the Hurt character like sitting in exile at the end of time in that last season? I mean, because
more or less.
I mean, I understand what you're saying. It's like, yeah, you could fit a doctor in there.
Yes, you can.
But how do we then get the John? Well, I guess that's what the new season would be.
Well, that's what.
Get the doctor
not the
out
new
of.
Season. Forget the new. There's nothing to do with the new. It's what's one happening? Episode.
I know. Well. One episode to resolve the Impossible Girl storyline? I thought they were going to
They've already resolved that.
No, the Doctor was disassembled through time at the end of last season. There hasn't been an episode
since then. Not the Doctor,
just
the girl.
No, he jumped in to join her.
Did he have the
Yes, image? That was the whole climax. After she goes through to save him and gets shattered through
then
time.
Then he goes into the Matrix.
Then he's going to leap in and the whoever, I can't remember who was standing there at that point, goes, are you out of your mind? You'll be disassembled and destroyed. You'll die.
Well, I have
And to. You'll die forever. And that's the cliffhanger was like the doctor leaps into his own
but it's after
time
that,
stream.
But, okay.
And that was the last episode last
Which
season.
Is not the first time he has done that, by
no,
the way.
No, well, please. He's, you know, Colin, done lots of things like that. But the question, though.
Trial of a Time Lord.
Yeah, all these things. But the question, though, becomes for me is, in the course of that, he finds this Hurt character. Or does Hurt just show up?
Hurt character's the last thing we
but
see.
But didn't we see him, like, turning to look at whoever had just walked into the room? Or is he just, they just threw him in there? That's right. They just stuck him in as a shot. And said, John Hurt is the doctor without explaining anything beyond that.
And
so, okay, so, but the
so
thing
he
is
a doctor. Now, is he a future doctor?
Or a past doctor?
Or a past doctor.
And you've created a good argument for having a hole. But the oddity, and I'm obviously extrapolating a great
and he
deal
says,
more
I did not
revealed.
Choose to do what I did, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And he's a shunned doctor.
But that was the thing. So it's like.
So why would he be a shunned doctor? I maintain that he's
shunned at the end of the Time War, wiping out the Daleks, which he's done several times.
But,
it's not like he hasn't killed the Daleks a thousand times
me,
over.
It's not about the Daleks.
It's about
Who
the Gallifrey.
Right.
So
who destroyed Gallifrey.
It's about him coming back from destroying Gallifrey and then and getting back to the point of becoming the Eccleston. I could see that as a direction.
Yeah.
There was another point.
It would
though.
Be it would if you're doing the Day of the Doctor, if you're doing the 50th anniversary episode,
now,
what better story can you do
than to wipe wrap up the time
than the Time Wars, yeah.
Well, the thing is though, it's a multi-part episode.
Is it? How many?
That's what I'm asking.
No.
Because it's not just going to be an hour. I thought you were saying it's going to be like four episodes.
Well, they give out this information.
I know, and I'm really getting annoyed because I'm realizing that I'm not getting a lot of Doctor this year. I'm waiting until 2014 for the reboot of the new Doctor. And
yeah,
theoretically, that, whatever this is going to end with the regeneration
no,
of the new Doctor.
No.
So that we
no.
don't get until 14.
You get that in Christmas. There will be a Christmas episode, and that will be Matt Smith's.
So I get two. That'll be his first.
The regeneration
will be at the Christmas episode.
Will be in the Christmas episode.
So I get this 1 hour 50th anniversary? That doesn't seem enough.
Let me answer.
Well, I'm just expressing
it's more than an hour.
Satisfaction. It better be.
I mean, many of the David Tennant episodes were 90 minutes long or 2 hours with commercials. They're going to be doing it in that kind of a format. It's going to be a TV movie kind of format. And what they're claiming is that it's going to be simulcast.
Throughout the universe.
Throughout the world.
Why stop at the world?
So if it's like, 7:15 or 8 o'clock in London, it'll be
5 a.m. or something. And
3 o'clock here. 3 p.m. here. And there will be, at least in England, and I assume that they're going to do it in some places here. You know, it's a 3D episode. So they're showing it in movie theaters.
Hmm.
And you can go into the movie theater and
with
get
3D
your
glasses.
And see it in 3D. I have no intention of doing that. You're invited to my house.
Yeah, although I got to say, if the 3D movie theater thing does sound pretty good.
It does. If they do it in New York, I have not heard anybody announcing. Mm. And you'll have to, it's November 23rd. The theaters are going to have to be booking this now.
Oh, yeah.
Now, maybe Brooklyn Academy of Music might
do it.
Well,
that's why I was thinking a venue like that, that can be more, what's the word I'm looking for, boutique-y. They can do more of a pop-up shop movie. What's the one?
Lister is here, by the way.
God, my brain is already gone. The begins with an L downtown art house.
The Landmark.
Landmark, but also that one on Houston.
That's Landmark Sunshine Cinema.
Oh, Sunshine. It's the Sunshine.
That's a Landmark Sunshine.
I know, but I think it was the Sunshine, so I missed the rest of it.
So,
are we that close to?
Yeah, we are.
We are,
although Lister's usually early, but it's 2:46.
Which is still like.
Gives us 11 minutes.
Early.
Yeah.
So.
This has your name on it.
The new Doctor.
Yes, Peter Capaldi.
Who I'm sure will be lovely.
Who I think is dead on.
I think he's dead on, but I just, it made me, I was a little disappointed in that we went right back to a middle-aged white guy. And it was like, they seemed like they might be trying something adventurous. I would have loved to have seen a female doctor. I never thought they'd have a black doctor. But it made me feel
you did hear that Idris Elba turned down the role of the 11th Doctor Matt Smith was hired.
Well, see, he would have been fabulous, but you know.
He would have been excellent. He turned it down.
Well, he had other things to do.
And I had nominated Adrian Lester.
Yes, and would have been a perfectly good backup
He would have been good, but you know, somebody else, John Ordover, came up with the perfect job for Adrian Lester.
Mm-hmm.
The perfect job. Adrian Lester should reboot Simon Templar.
That would be a good job. That's
very
funny. No, he would be.
Saint?
He would be. Well, see, that would be.
He would be dead on.
And it would be much better than the movie thing.
You know, you can't do a black James Bond. That's difficult. And people had problems with Daniel Craig having blonde hair.
But a black saint would be a nice idea.
But a black saint, absolutely. It works perfectly. And Adrian Lester has the versatility. He is such a great actor.
Than all that was bringing to mind, but I can't think what it was.
He would have been a fun Who, but he'll be a better saint.
No, that would be a good idea. But
and there will be a woman doctor. Feel like, that's inevitable.
Yeah, but you know, this just seems so much going back to. I mean, it seems such a traditionalist doctor, and it was like.
My
feeling is
point.
Like, you know,
they haven't done
the doctor only saves England. But he really doesn't care about Earth. It's God and country.
Is
it's
there something
British
besides
Empire.
England?
Evidently not according to the BBC.
Exactly.
But I mean, it's like he's always British. He's always like, you know, I mean, whether it's like
the
larger
British
Great Britain or
Corporation.
I
know.
That
is the entire
and if it was
world.
Made in America, he'd be from California.
It's paid for by your license fees.
Yes, I know. I thought they were going further and pushing the franchise. And they, you know, that was it. And they
now there's BBC America.
Everyone gave them a hard time. So now they're leaving Matt behind.
But
Here's the thing.
They've never had a traditional doctor since the reboot. Nobody has ever seen one. It went from Chris Eccleston to David Tennant to Matt Smith. Nobody has ever seen a doctor as old as, you know, like 34.
No, as the original doctors, you know. It's like, no.
Exactly. So Peter Capaldi...
Yeah,
and I'll tell you another reason why I like the choice of Peter Capaldi, although I don't think it's going to go the way that I want. Mm-hmm. Peter Capaldi will make a very, very good husband to River Song.
Yes, well, except we won't. Well, we still
we don't
can't
know.
See
They've
her.
Left her
well,
story.
Well, no. They've
open.
Wrapped her story up, but there are thousands of years for all we know
That's
of romance
right.
in between, so she can still be popular.
Well,
in
she
and
talks
out.
About how
she
many
travels
different
absolutely
how we, many that, different ways
it's
she's
a
seen.
Thick book.
She's it's a very thick
it's
book.
It's a thick book.
That's
I
right.
mean, she's got hundreds of years of experience.
She should
there.
Have a
We've
spotting
seen
guide,
it
like a Peterson's
there
guide.
There we go.
To
well, they
sort of
started comparing notes. You know, they did start comparing notes.
Yeah,
points.
They did.
But so I mean. Even though they wrapped her up, they left her in the library. They've wrapped her several times. So.
But, you know, by putting her in
the
library, she's very easily retrievable.
And downloaded into a new body.
Yes.
But no, I mean, it's like the haunting and the ghostly
her. I have to get my thumb drive.
Wrapping the things up,
yes.
But yes. No, that was the nice thing about that was the idea that, though River, we get to say goodbye to her several times, that we can always hope to see her again. I love the actress, who was just
Alex
brilliant
Kingston is wonderful,
in the part.
Yeah.
And
she was great
yes,
in ER,
he would make
and she
he
was
would
great
make
in
a
all
very
Flanders,
good
and she's
and he
great
would,
in Doctor Who.
He would make a very good husband to her.
Yeah, and the two of them with their sharp mouths, they would be perfect.
Well, except and, in kissing, evidently, that sounds a little painful. Sharp mouths.
Well, as it were, no tongues. But the
cutting remarks.
Peter Capaldi from his previous series. I always forget. The movie was In the Loop, but I'm always forget the thick of it.
The thick of it. Yeah. The thick of it. Talk about that. It's very annoying to have a crown that could pop out at any given moment.
Ah, the hollow crown.
Well, this is the hollow crown. It's in my mouth.
Yes, you're talking.
So I've got to go home and glue it back in again because I'm afraid of going to sleep without it in to protect the raw root of my mouth. And at the same time, I'm afraid of falling asleep and having it fall out and choke me in my sleep. So I've got to glue it back in again. Damn it.
Yeah. Yeah, I have been there. But as I said 2 weeks ago, and this, and nobody got it. I said on the
I'm
air,
sorry, but that's, I mean, I can remember a lot of things about the
teeth.
Doctor, but line for line readings of regenerated
that
doctors,
was the,
no.
That was a regeneration. It's not line
I
for line.
Know,
that
know.
Was the
it's
first
like,
regeneration
no, but
for
I don't
the
remember first
generation.
Comments of regenerations of previous doctors. My God, Jim. You've out-fanboyed me. I can't even begin to. To remember these, the dialogue.
Listen, that one person might not remember is fine. But the fact that I put it out to the entire listenership.
It needs to tell you something about how
But I mentioned it to one person. They said, of course, David Tennant.
Oh, well.
You know, and it was like that. So it depends on who you're talking to.
Who you're talking
exactly.
to?
Exactly. Yes. And besides, I'm waiting for somebody to say, shouldn't it be Dr. Whom?
Well, and they... Yes, well, they should be struck down.
Yeah, you know, instead of Gallifrey, he comes from grammar.
Yeah, grammar free.
Yes, exactly. Gammer free.
Yes, exactly. Grammar free. Yes. That's why it's Doctor Who.
What are you writing now? Are you finally writing
oh,
the third
yes,
novel
I
of your
am.
Trilogy?
I actually,
Thank
well, you know,
God.
The first chapter at NERSIF last month was well received.
Oh, yes, I
nice.
Have to mention the upcoming NERSIF.
That's true.
Yes.
There's barely enough time. You can still do that.
Yes, I can.
But no, the first chapter is already
Fran Wild
so
and Rajan Khanna will be our readers. And it's an evening put together for us by Amy Goldschlager.
Oh,
and we usually have a free admission policy. You know, we suggest a donation, but admission is free. We're not doing that this time because it's November 5th. That's Guy Fawkes Day.
Oh, so a penny for the guy.
That's right. The minimum admission is a penny for the guy.
I should wear a Guy Fawkes mask from V for Vendetta to the reading.
Now, you see, those masks predate V for Vendetta.
I know. They're Guy Fawkes masks.
Well, yes. Go back to the
I mean, you know, he was
source.
Drawing on a historic referent, but it's a lovely thing, and it's a nice design, and it works.
No, they
well
used it
contest.
Very well in that movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's one of the few movies by the Wachowski that I mostly buy into.
Yeah, really? See, I wasn't fond of it. I like parts of it, you know, but the flaws in it
well, compared
that
to
I had
their
issues
other
with. I love The Matrix. The Matrix. The Matrix with Joel Silver pissing all over.
I
wasn't
like the
happy
Matrix
with the next two.
Up to the Delphi. After that, when it just cuts to the chase, it becomes boring.
No, yeah. Well, it's the same issue that Inception had, which is the last
That's
half
right.
hour ends up being a lot of shooting.
That's exactly right.
And it was
right.
like, oh my God, are we going to go through three levels of shooting?
Yeah.
And sure enough, Inception took us through three levels of dream worlds of shooting. And it was like, this is insane. But it's the problem with
exactly.
those movies
that
is that it ends up having to live up to its action movie roots in the last 20 minutes. And all you get is 20 minutes of shooting.
Yeah, but apparently that is that's where the phrase "cut to the chase" comes from.
Well,
that
it pays off.
It
People
goes
came
to
for
the
chase.
Silent era. Goes to the silent era
People
when producers would look at movies and they would say, "Okay,
they're talking a long time.
To...
Just cut to the chase."
Yes.
Oh no, I'm sure
that's exactly
yes,
where
yes,
it
no,
comes
no,
from. Oh my God. Well, with 1 minute left, let me just
Stop.
Finish. Promoting that
Promote
reading.
That reading.
Which is at the Soho Gallery for Digital Art. If you want more information about it, go to my website, ourwolf.com, HOURWOLF, or on Facebook, look up the NYRSF, New York Review of Science Fiction, NYRSF Readings. And we have a group there, and you can join that group. I don't know why I have to join to read it. I make it an open and public group, but you know, people still need to join. And you can see the event and join the event and all that kind of stuff. So that you know, either of those are the way to do it.
Because all social media is empiric. It needs to control
you. Do
completely.
You have any books currently in print that we need to promote or stories that are out
well,
at
Bite
this moment?
Marks and Blood Pressure are still around.
Oh, okay.
They're always available. And I'm working on the third, as we've just mentioned.
Yes.
So, Past
yes.
Life It's now, I've gone, been
you
going
read,
through.
You read a nice section of that at the last reading. It was
chapter.
Really nice.
I went back and dug up the
very
It was
well.
Received well. Rick Bowes was happy with it, which made me happy. So yeah. Rick said on Facebook he liked it, so I was very pleased. But yes, it's progressing slowly as I cut this other film, but it's going nicely. I've gone through the material that exists and didn't scream and weep, so it's like I saw what I needed
to
toss.
Well, we're past time, you understand.
Let's go.
Well, yeah, the theme is coming up in the background, and let me tell people, next week on the show we have an agenda. It's October 31st.
God.
All Hallows Eve. Happy Samhain, everybody.
Ah, yes.
So it'll be our Samhain show next week. I'm thinking possibly Shuttle Bop by Theodore Sturgeon, or else just our annual music mix. It'll be one or the other.
There you go.
So that's assuming we're still around. So stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn Clapper with Lister coming your way on these airwaves any moment. Max, if you have my cell phone number, call that. Otherwise, call here and we'll figure out what to do about your food. Thank you, Terrence Taylor, for being here. And thank you, listeners, for being there. And hopefully I'll be back next week. Have a good morning.
Cause I make the pigs tremble when I burn a cymbal. Yo, I'm quick and nimble like Jack. but I'm a black man attacking the flag. I keep my torch handy, I'm no Yankee Doodle Dandy, so just hand me a flag from the fascist and watch me burn that piece of to ashes. Cause the real meaning is what the masses must learn. That's why the red, white, and blue must burn, baby, burn. Let's find the people who hate this. These are the places we'll hit.
Panama, talking about Peru, Azania, Brixton, Belfast, and forget Korea, Beirut, and forget Haiti, Iran, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Mexico, talking about uptown, Harlem, New York City, y'all, and Nicaragua, East and South Central LA, California, IA, Miami, do or die, Bed-Stuy, never ran, never will, Brownsville, boogie down, South Bronx, yeah.
My man Joey to jail, and now they got him in court because he burned the flag. That's the name of the game. Well, I quit playing. I doubt the suckers want you to hear what I'm saying about this nation. Freedom supposed to be the format, but I step on your flag like it's a floor mat. Maim and mangle, the star spangled. I'm not trying to diss you. I use the flag like toilet tissue to wipe my black ass. What? You think that I'm a jackass? I see a flag and I attack fast with some fire. My desire to burn what Betty Ross sold up. The truth I show up about America, America, home. The free book. This is the home of the slave. Now hold on, just a mother minute. You gave me freedom of speech in the First Amendment. So why wanna scold me when I torch the flag? I'm only doing what you told me. You don't like it, so what? I'm not scared of you. Your flag, America too. See, I made up this new rule and I want y'all to learn it. Strike a match to the American flag and burn it.
Five minutes after 3 o'clock, 99 Cinco, listen to live right here at your favorite radio station, WBAI. 516-620-3602, we need to get this going. The Militant Canary at the end of the tunnel, the Pacifica on a stick, $50 if you just be the first caller to call and pledge something at 516-620-3602. Yeah. We do this until 5 o'clock, y'all. Burn, baby, burn. Yeah.
It's so divine. It can make you feel a little better now. Stay with me all night. I rock you one time. Come on, come on, come on. I wanna make you feel a little better now. Come make we do it and we feel a little better.
99 Sinkalista Live still celebrating Laura Ernst's birthday right here. Got to be Halloween. Happy birthday, Laura Ernst in Stony Brook, what you say? Your favorite artist, y'all. Yo. Yes, it must be Halloween.
Fi broke no fight. Girl, I beg you out the light. Lock your door tight. Panabasa come figure take one bite. It was a dreadful sight. Oh, we bite sister right. You shoulda hear she born.
Jesus Christ.
I beg you take time, Bonnie. Rather beg you take time, Bonnie. Me say at 12 o'clock, Bonnie come out of inbox. Him eye get red and him ear start dread. Him teeth get long, man, him start feel strong. When him forward pan the scene, you hear a girl start scream. I beg you take time, Bonnie. Rather beg you take time, Bonnie. Can me set it out the kangle. Take off your bangle. Turn your neck pan the right angle. Girl, out the kangle. Take off your bangle. Turn your neck pan the right angle. Ima di best in a re business. Bani chew your neck like a Wrigley's. Bani ya di best in a re business. Bani chew your neck like a Wrigley's. Say Bani dis a gwan like him aristocrat. Another time him dis a come in a di farm of a bat. Him fly in a di town, say my seeker come around. Another time him disappear in a one tall black gown. Come in a di town, figure out a ion. Him a di prince of darkness. Bani a di prince of darkness. Say rat him gone up a di chapel, figure check sister Lord. But what him really want is just a pint of blood. Say Bonnie's not a ref or a cricket umpire. Say Bonnie is a wicked and dreadful vampire. Take time, Bonnie. Rather beg you take time, Bonnie.
Eaters! The music sounds called the Bamba's Callings, I would say. Right, them come for make enough challenge in Collinswood, baby.
Coming at the night, say around midnight. Coming at the night, say around midnight. A rim no come, fi broke no fight. Rada him no come, fi broke no fight. Got me safe out the light. Lock your door tight. Banabasa come and fi go take one bite. Out the light. Lock your door tight. Banabasa come, fi go take one bite.
But so hard to forget the day you walked out of my life, baby. I thought you'd be in paradise. All the way you make so much noise and follow all your silly friends' advice. baby, now you're boxing over here, and you're boxing over there.